there's a way to make an entrance.
My destiny.
It was now a conspiracy of witches.
Download Veely today.
My name is Martina Cole. I'm a crime author. The nature of true crime often defies understanding or logic. And in my opinion, the most difficult perpetrators of crime to work out are the women that murder time and time again. In this series, I'll be shining a light on six of the most prolific female mass murderers in history. So welcome to the dark world of the Lady Killers. As a crime writer, I sometimes loosely base the characters in my books on real people. But when you look at horror fiction, you're entering the realm of pure fantasy. Most of us are fascinated by ghosts, ghouls, and things that go bump in the night, because we know that the bogeyman will never really get us. But what about the bogey woman? In this program, we travel to Central Europe to meet the worst female serial killer in history. A woman allegedly so terrifying that she inspired a whole generation of gothic writers and filmmakers.
Elizabeth Báthory was a 16th century Hungarian noblewoman who supposedly carried out the bloody murders of over 600 of her female servants. But the problem is that most of what we know about her life is based on myth and folklore that have turned her into a vampire femme fatale dubbed Countess Dracula. Our story is based on piecing together the truth about her life from original documents held at Budapest National Archives. These reveal that the Countess was born into a powerful Hungarian family in 1560. From the history books, we know that during this time, the country was involved in a brutal and long-running war with the Turks. Her personal letters reveal Báthory was a loving wife and mother to several children. We also know she ran her family's vast estates when her husband was away at battle. But she was also accused of being a mass murderess who enjoyed torturing her victims to the point of death.
Unbelievably, her killing spree went on unchecked for over three decades. What I'm hoping is that the documents will help me sort out the fact from the fiction behind the life of the Bloody Countess.
How was it possible that a countess, a woman who spoke multiple languages, who wrote in multiple languages, who conducted negotiations with two empires, who had children that she loved and clearly cared for, could also be a person who could kill 600 or more of her servants, one at a time, by her own hand?
It's clear that Elizabeth Báthory did have an unusual interest in blood. She seems to have enjoyed having her victims reduced to a sort of bloodied state.
She was outrageous, and she loved her children. She was a wonderful mother, and all the stuff they say about her, I don't believe.
After the death of her husband in 1604, we know from these documents that Elizabeth was left in total control of their 10 castles and estates. We get an idea of her wealth from her last will and testament. Her land stretched right across Hungary and Transylvania. Her favourite castle was at Kastíz, which is now in modern-day Slovakia. Here she ran a very highly sophisticated court, where visiting royalty and nobles enjoyed her hospitality. But the girls who served her saw a very different side to their mistress.
She was fascinated by young girls and by torturing them sometimes sexually. She would burn their pubic hair with candle flames. She would make her seamstresses do their work naked.
Elizabeth Báthory had a terrible temper, and she enjoyed torturing people. She enjoyed humiliating them. If you didn't iron her things properly, she would put an iron onto your face and leave you marked for life.
A servant girl who had displeased her had her jaw physically ripped open. Bathory leapt forward and she took the jaw of the girl and she just ripped it open with her hands. I mean, that's a true sadistic rage.
Like many nobles at the time, Countess Bathory recruited her serving girls from the area surrounding her estate. Near Kashtis alone, we know she owned 17 villages within a 50-mile radius of her great castle. As the landowner, her power over her peasants would have been absolute.
Someone who had such complete command and control over her local environment, and who had perhaps very extreme ideas of sexual pleasure, an interest in sadism of some kind, a fascination with blood, and having the power to enact those fantasies within an environment which she dominated and controlled absolutely, is not a healthy cocktail.
She was so powerful, anything was possible for her. And everyone else, with the exception of trusted friends, was nothing.
I'm beginning to get a picture of Bathory as a woman who treated her servants in a way which went far beyond what was acceptable, even in these cruel times. As a crime author, I want to find out if there's any documentary evidence to support the more outrageous stories. Was it really possible that she bathed in the blood of young virgin girls to rejuvenate her own good looks? She was a powerful 16th century Hungarian noblewoman who allegedly murdered over 600 young peasant girls. If the stories are to be believed, the way that she slaughtered her victims went way beyond anything I could imagine in my wildest nightmares. But that's the problem, really. There are so many myths surrounding her life, it's difficult to know the truth about her crimes. But by looking through original documents from the Hungarian National Archives, I can begin to build up a picture of the woman behind the legend. For me, it's also important to put her crimes into some kind of historical context. Elizabeth Bathory was born on the 7th of August 1560 into a Hungarian society which was constantly at war with the Ottoman Turks. Records show that right up until her death in 1614, these were very violent times. And this is bound to have affected her personality.
There were battles between Protestants and Catholics. There were battles between Ottomans and Christians, all taking place on Hungarian soil. It was kind of the center of this great battle of East and West, of two different religions, of paganism and religion, and a battle of nobility to hold on to its power.
So it's an unstable, violent, complicated environment to be a landowner and a noble to survive in the politics of the period. And much, much worse if you also happen to be a woman.
From what I can gather from historical documents, Bathory was born with a platinum spoon in her mouth. Money and wealth is one thing, but it seems her family's power over everything and everyone around them was total. Reading between the lines, there was definitely a dark side to many of her relatives.
She's born into one of the most important noble clans in Central Europe. She's related directly and immediately to several princes of Transylvania, to a king of Poland. Her family is one of the most wealthy and influential clans in the region, with different branches, with authority, lands and castles across the kingdom. So she's born into extreme wealth, privilege and power by the standards of the day.
She came from a clan of people who were notorious both for their bravery on the one hand, and her name, as you know, Bator, is the Hungarian word for brave. Many of her ancestors were brave warriors, but they're also uncommonly cruel. And some of them were also given to peculiar fits of epilepsy or madness, so that it was a very violent clan, as well as an illustrious clan.
She had cousins and brothers who were princes and bishops, but also who were, in a way, mass murderers, who would torture the peasants, who would kill their opponents in the most brutal and savage manner.
Any modern royal knows if you treat your staff badly today, the chances are you'll find yourself in the tabloids. But in the 16th century, peasants had few rights and any wrongdoings were rarely documented. The Countess lived during the same era as another strong female leader, Elizabeth I. Thanks to extensive archives, we know that the Virgin Queen ordered more tortures than any other monarch in our history. Hungarians at that time, though, simply didn't keep as many records. But from what evidence there is, We know that the brutal torture of servants was part of everyday life.
The disparity between the lifestyles of aristocrats like the Bathory family and the lifestyles of their servants and peasants is, by today's standards, extraordinary.
She would never ever question the idea that there are kind of two species on the planet, you know, those who have the power and the riches, and it is their right to do so, and all others, such as peasants, etc., who are just mere objects and insects to be used as and when, and also even those nobles who are below her would probably be treated with indifference and a certain amount of disdain as well.
In the 16th century, it was very commonplace to torture peasants and servants. They really were considered chattel. I mean, they're barely human. So the fact that Elizabeth tormented and tortured her servants was not unusual. What was unusual was the extent to which she did it.
What's interesting to me is that although Bathory probably had free rein to do as she liked from an early age in her father's court, this was still a very misogynistic society. So when it came to picking her own husband, she had very little freedom. From these marriage bans displayed in a local church in 1575, we know that Elizabeth was married at 15. Like many noble matches, the union with 21-year-old Ferenc Nadaski was arranged by their parents. She didn't do too badly, though. He was a fabulously rich and handsome warrior.
We make a toast!
The fact that the marriage was agreed when Bathory was 2 years old suggests that the match was arranged by their parents with strategic considerations in mind.
Their union is a fantastic success in many ways, as a strategic success. It brings together two of the most important clans of that region.
It's probably best to think of Elizabeth Bathory and the Count of Posh and Bex. These were the most popular, beautiful, wealthy, powerful people. I mean, the Brangelinas of their day.
He married her. That improved the strength of the family in terms of its politics. And at the same time, they apparently got along very well, right down to torturing people together.
There's evidence from various documents that her husband already had an appetite for torture away from the battlefield. He's said to have taught Elizabeth in the finer techniques of inflicting pain on their servant girls from the start of their marriage. Call me an old romantic, but I can think of better ways for newlyweds to pass the time of day. The teenage bride may have started out as a pupil, but it seems that through her 20s and her 30s, she surpassed her husband's sadistic tendencies.
Her husband appears to be complicit in the earliest maltreatment of serving girls. The earliest accounts we have are about 1600, 1602.
Her husband, apparently with one of his servant girls, doused her in honey and made her stand outside for at least a day while she was being stung by wasps and ants, you know, naked.
We have one intriguing piece of evidence about how the couple, both of them, treated their servants, and it comes in a letter from their local Lutheran minister in 1602, complaining about the brutal treatment of servants by the parent. For a minister to have the courage to write a letter of protest criticizing the behavior of two such extraordinarily powerful people tells us, I think, that there was something already by that stage beyond the bounds of normal, acceptable behavior going on in terms of the way these two together treated their servants.
Perhaps there is a union there that's incredibly unhealthy. You know, they have the power, they have the money, they have the means, and they've certainly got a lot of very accessible victims to prey on. And all of those things, I think, you know, are really a lethal combination.
The couple may have been love's sadistic young dream, but with her husband away at war, records show that she was basically left in charge. As a feminist, I can't help but be impressed with the fact that she ran this vast empire and protected her lands from attack. But piecing together the evidence, at this stage, her treatment of young servant girls deteriorated.
At the time when her husband is away at war, she is running a huge business enterprise. I think that's the way of looking at it. If you like, she's running the equivalent of a FTSE 100 company.
Bathory was incredibly shrewd and hands-on. She was very strict and personally supervised the work of her servants. Unusually, she also seems to have a good grasp of military matters. Something you accept of the man rather than a woman at this time.
I think she was amazing. She did it all. She looked after her seven castles and did everything and wrote everything and spoke to everyone.
It puts her in a position, I suppose one could say, where she wasn't being properly supervised. And on top of that, where when her husband dies, she has no supervision at all, other than that exerted by her relatives, who are largely absent.
In 1604, when Bathory was 44 years old, her husband was killed in battle. At this point, I think that it's obvious that despite her riches, she was bored and frustrated. If I was bored and frustrated, I'd probably read a book or get my nails done. But Bathory appears to have thrown herself into more and more sadistic pursuits.
But it's at that point that she becomes truly sadistic, I think. She is on her own. She now has all the power of his name and hers concentrated in herself. She is the chatelaine of many castles with many servants. And this is when she starts to be truly vicious and cruel to her servants and to others.
It's a bit like somebody with sadistic inclinations, the ability, as it were, to carry out heinous acts, having their brakes taken off completely. She was allowed progressively to discover that she could get away with more and more.
Really, her obsession became sexuality, it became youth and power.
Countess Bathory is alleged to have murdered over 600 young women over the course of 35 years. By my reckoning, that's about 17 a year. That seems a staggering feat for just one person. According to stories and court records, she was assisted in her maiming and killing by a very strange band of helpers.
There were her three servants, the most famous two, Ilona Yeo and Dorothea Santesh. She had only one known manservant, and that was a deformed dwarf by the name of Fisco. Elizabeth had things like clockwork-based great cages with springs that would shoot out blades. Other devices that would mechanically cause injury and death.
She had a girl put into a cage, this is in her rooms in Vienna, steel cage with kind of spikes, so they say, facing in. And this naked girl's in this cage being hoisted into the air, and she was slowly speared to death by one of the servants, while Elizabeth's dwarf, called Fisgo, shouted sexual obscenities from below. I mean, this is an elaborate sexual torture.
I don't think that any one girl, in terms of how she was treated, was identical to another. I mean, there's evidence to say that sometimes it was burning, sometimes it was biting, sometimes, you know, it was beating, sometimes it was the mixture of the three. You know, they weren't the same behaviours the whole way across the board.
Bathory would often fly into violent rages and kill girls instantaneously. However, court records held in Budapest reveal that she would often take pleasure in torturing them slowly to maximize their pain and suffering.
Elizabeth would take servants, strip them naked out in the winter, you know, very, very cold, and pour water over them until they froze to death. And they actually froze to the ground.
To me, it sounds as if there was escalation, you know, the whole time, getting worse and worse and worse, and seeing almost this experimentation, seeing how much the human body could take.
She was actually quite power mad and quite insane. And so she would probably be very daring and do things that people wouldn't quite believe were true.
When I started to examine Bathory's life, I was fascinated by the legend that she was a vampire. As a writer, I've always been interested in how real characters are transformed into literary creations. The most famous story is that Bathory was obsessed with bathing in the blood of young virgins because she believed it was so pure and untainted, it would rejuvenate her looks. This is one tale that I simply can't find any evidence to support. What's more likely is that around the 18th and 19th centuries, stories about vampires were becoming very popular. So horror writers decided to turn her into a beautiful creature of the night.
There's no doubt that Elizabeth, who was a very stunning young woman, she was said to have hair as black as sumptuous ravens.
The portrait that we have really is of quite a fine-looking woman, but whether that can be reliably believed, if I was painting a portrait of Elizabeth Báthory, I think I would do a nice job of making her look quite decent.
She was a beautiful girl with a very fair skin, dark hair, but she was obsessed with her fading looks.
There was a servant girl combing her hair, pulled a little too harshly.
Ow! Stupid girl!
Elizabeth punched her in the nose, and she did it hard enough so the girl bled. The blood spilled on her hand, and although she would have wiped it away, she noticed that actually it had a rejuvenation quality. And that's where they say she started becoming very, very lustful for blood.
That 19th century view is a great story. It allows one to have kind of a horror novel made out of a real life.
I think it's pretty obvious that Báthory didn't actually bathe in blood. But letters and documents from the time show that various members of her community did express deep concern about her behaviour and the fact that so many young girls were disappearing. Today, Každice is a small rural village in modern Slovakia. It's hard to imagine that for three decades the countess terrorised this whole area, killing so many of their young women. I think it's awful that no one was willing to do anything for years because of Báthory's total power as mistress and landowner.
To start with, the parents of these girls were proud that their daughters were chosen to work at the castle. But when their children failed to return, the rumors spread.
I think with Elizabeth, you know, the downfall came, and this isn't something that was that's uncommon when you look at these types of killers. She became reckless, she was killing more and more and not particularly concerned about where their bodies were being found.
Some were supposedly just chucked over the castle walls to instill fear in the villagers when they came upon these mutilated corpses.
Putting them on the graveyard, not burying them, and throwing them in the river and sticking them in the garden and you know, kicking them out of carriages.
She had a lot of bodies to get rid of, so that she did it in various ways.
And more to the point, she started to choose a different victim type. So she upped the ante and went for girls that were going to be missed, girls from a noble background.
At one point, she was running out of victims. I mean, there was only so many serving girls you can bleed to death. So she started to entice young noble women to her castle.
It's a sad indictment of the times that people only started to take notice of Báthory's crimes when young girls from the upper classes started to disappear. Who knows? She may have carried on killing merrily if she'd stuck to just peasants. But I think that by this stage, her bloodlust was just insatiable.
A soprano in the local church, in Vienna actually, where she maintained a house, so impressed her that she asked this woman to come and sing for her. And the woman, so nervous in Elizabeth's presence, could not sing well. Elizabeth flew into one of her rages, and forgetting that the singer was also a noblewoman, tortured and killed her.
It was one thing to mistreat and even kill peasants and servants. It was another thing to mistreat and kill the daughters of lower-level gentry and lower-level noble families. That was one of the triggers which launched the investigation against her.
So it looked like the worst female serial killer in history was about to be stopped in her murderous tracks. But what I've discovered is that Countess Báthory was never put on trial for her heinous crimes. And I want to know why. Countess Elizabeth Báthory is said to be the most prolific female mass murderer in history. During a bloody reign which lasted three decades, the Hungarian nobleman is alleged to have slaughtered over 600 of her female servants. I've been looking at documents from the National Archives in Budapest to discover whether she really was as sadistic as she's been portrayed in folklore. What we do know is that in 1610, King Matthias of Hungary ordered an investigation into her behaviour and sent his right-hand man, George Terzo, to Kastély's castle.
When the leading man of the kingdom, George Terzo the Palatine, sends his troops into the castle and accompanies them in, we have this graphic account which he actually writes to his wife. He finds the dead body of a servant girl immediately upon entering and the dying body of another one.
They found, I think it was 9 girls in various stages. They were mutilated. I mean, it was very clear that some of them had been bitten, some of them had been burnt, that they hadn't died from natural causes.
Depending on whether the stories are true, from the moment of his arrival in the castle, he was alerted that the scandal was worse even than he had been given to believe.
So we are talking about quite reckless abandonment of all principles, all morals, and really a lack of care for how people might perceive her. We can get an idea, I think, of the seriousness with which this is taken by the legal action.
In 1610, it was unheard of to launch an official inquiry against a noble of Bathory's stature. As a feminist, part of me wonders whether she was the victim of powerful men who plotted her downfall to get their hands on her lands. But looking at the evidence, it's far more likely that she was threatening the reputation of the whole of her class. And in this fragile society, that was something the king just couldn't risk.
So they go to the trouble of interviewing about 270 witnesses, sometimes twice, so it comes out as 300 witness statements. And only about 4 of them say, I know nothing about this.
This is an unusual event because this is sort of ordinary people giving testimony against someone from the ranks of the nobility. And we can tell that a lot of them are drawn from further down the social spectrum because they're illiterate. Whenever they sign, they just put an X at the bottom to show that the testimony, which they couldn't actually read, of course, was the testimony that they'd given. And here we get the stories of cruel and vicious violence meted out by Elizabeth Bathory and her faithful retainers.
Despite the testimonies, the king agreed with the Palatine that the countess should not be put on trial. Had she been found guilty, she would have been executed. Unbelievably, official documents show it was her helpers, not Bathory, who actually faced the music.
Elizabeth Bathory was never tried for murder. I think that's the first thing to say. The people who were tried and executed were her allegedly faithful servants, the ones who had themselves killed or been complicit in the murders.
Physico the dwarf, Anna Darvulia, the demented crone, they went in front of the tribunal and they were punished pretty nastily. I think some of them had their fingernails torn out and were then burned to death. I think Physico was decapitated.
I find it really ironic that the testimonies of her faithful servants were extracted under torture. Something that I guess is a reflection of the times.
If you look at what happened to many of the people who were either convicted or even those that refused to give evidence, what was done to them was very much on a par to what Elizabeth was doing to her servants and peasants. And it was just as awful.
We tend to regard now that any evidence obtained under torture is inauthentic. The view in the 17th century was that evidence obtained under torture is more authentic. So they will torture people as a matter of recourse.
So we don't know whether these were in fact the things that she did from that evidence. However, church records show an inordinate number of deaths of young women whenever she was around.
There was talk that she should be tortured as well and to enjoy the kind of torments that she put upon her victims, but this was not to be the case. She was a noble woman, and the nobles protected themselves.
To have put her to death, you'd have needed a trial, and that's what they want to avoid. And in a sense, what we have is an informal penalty, the penalty of just putting her in a locked room and, if you like, throw away the key. Just forget about the whole thing.
She was allowed to live. She was imprisoned in her castle. That's, you know, what we've been led to believe. And that no one was allowed to talk about her or say her name for 100 years meant that they almost just wrote it out of history.
We know that the Countess was kept in her castle for 4 years until her death at the age of 54. I believe it was the conspiracy of silence about her crimes that led to the myths escalating about her life. One of the strangest stories was about her childhood. Bathory had a privileged upbringing, but even in those days, noble children weren't protected from the horrors of everyday life. When she was 6, she was said to have been deeply affected by the brutal treatment of a gypsy in her father's court.
He was tortured, then a horse was cut open and he was sewn into it, sewn up into this horse, and both were let to die, just left to die. And this long process of dying and rotting was apparently very important to her.
Perhaps the more kind of brutal and vicious and sadistic type killings, which involved, you know, torturous ideas, may have had more impact on her and may have just sparked some kind of element of enjoyment or sadistic pleasure.
There's no documentary evidence to support the gypsy tale, but that doesn't mean it isn't true. In the 16th century, many peasants and lower class nobles were still illiterate and stories were passed down by word of mouth, which has been the problem I've had throughout my investigation. But by all accounts, the Bathorys were a well-educated clan for their day. Maybe that's why they insisted on marrying each other.
I don't think that Elizabeth, as with many members of her family, was entirely sane. There's a level of inbreeding which I think may have been behind many of the thought patterns that she had.
Her relatives, who was a prince of Transylvania, was a very, very unstable character who was constantly resigning office and then coming back again. So there is a history of some mental instability known within the Bathory family.
There was a lot of very peculiar and also very violent people in the family. So I think that she had the genes for something.
We know that Elizabeth married her husband when she was 15. That seems way too young by today's standards. But she's alleged to have become sexualized at an even earlier age.
I think it's possibly within the family and within the kind of culture to have sexual experiences a lot earlier. In her case, it clearly was very early, and she will have had, in combination with these sadistic experiences, sexual experiences which perhaps reflected this.
The way Elizabeth Bathory ran around town when she was younger, she was almost like Paris Hilton. She can get away with whatever she wanted to do. She can wear whatever she wants. She can just, you know, sex with anybody that she likes. Nobody stops her.
If she felt like having sex, then come here. Do it to me. Quick. Now. And then if they didn't, then they get thrown out. But, I mean, basically, she was a sex pot.
She seems to have interpreted her role as socially powerful within her community in more ways than simply controlling the estates and dominating the local economy. She seems also to have played more of an active role than many of her contemporaries would have thought acceptable in terms of relationships outside marriage.
As a teenage bride, her husband introduced her to the pleasures of torturing young peasant girls. But when he went away to war, it seems the Countess's appetite for sadism grew throughout her 20s and 30s. Bathory left no diary explaining why she picked exclusively on young virgin servant girls. But piecing together witness statements about their torture, I believe her motives were sexual.
Now, why Elizabeth Bathory actually picked on young virgin girls, some as young as 12, there is a discussion that she was bisexual. In fact, we're pretty sure that she was, influenced mostly by an Aunt Clara, who was a well-known lesbian and bisexual. She may have felt that she wanted to torment these young peasant girls because they aroused her.
She obviously would see these individuals as competition for her, and to put them in their place and eliminate them would give her a certain amount of sense of power.
She was sexually active in a normal way, as we might consider now. She was sexually hedonistic in that regard. But when it came to her peasants and the servants that she killed, she was actually a sexual sadist.
The sexual sadists that we know about, there tends to be a fantasy that they have in their heads that they want to act out into reality. Some of them will remain just with the fantasy in their heads, but others will go that next step to act it out. And of course, that's what we've seen from the Bathory case.
When her husband died in 1604, it seems Bathory's sadistic behaviour got out of hand. Records show more and more young women who went to work at the castle were disappearing. By this time, Bathory was in her 40s. To me, it's clear her mental state was deteriorating.
What went on here was very real, and it went way beyond even what would be contemplated often in wars to interrogate individuals. This kind of torture was malicious. She was just carrying out and inflicting these horrendous injuries out of pleasure.
And she'd often focus her cruelty on her genitalia. And this leads you to believe that actually she was getting a great sexual rush from tormenting the people in this way.
There was a hypersexual and perverse sexual nature, you know, to Elizabeth, she experienced orgasm with the dying victims. But that bespeaks a very aggressive but also extremely morbid sexuality.
When she was really weak and unable to go downstairs and do her tortures, she would have a wench brought to her bedside, and then Elizabeth Báthory would just simply lean out of the bed and bite the girl's tearing chunks of flesh off. I mean, truly disgusting.
That's the kind of savagery and sadism that you would see in somebody that was quite deranged, actually, and somebody that maybe was at the end of their tether. It just goes to show you that when she couldn't vent her sadistic desires, she would concentrate them into what she could do.
Báthory's crimes took place in the days long before psychiatry. But even given the little we know about her life, I think there are clues to her behaviour over the 30 years she killed.
Well, sexual sadists are incredibly rare as a group, but pretty much all sexual sadists are psychopaths. And, you know, Elizabeth would probably be in that category. And it's really that they derive pleasure and sexual arousal from seeing someone else's suffering at their own hands.
And she was fascinated by extending this behaviour because, needless to say, once you have carried out one act, to carry out the same act again, it only gives the same sexual pleasure, to push it further is a motivator, to the point where it was almost like a killing fest for her, and her appetite became almost unsustainably voracious.
Because of her power and privilege, Báthory was able to turn her wildest fantasies into reality within the confines of her own personal torture chambers at Castries Castle. And I can think of a few people today who'd be more than happy to pay good money to visit those.
With sexual sadists, because they have normally these quite complex fantasies that they want to try and make a reality, the one thing they really need is the time and the space and the seclusion and isolation to be able to do exactly what they want. And she had all of that.
The number of castles that she had and the size of them and the fact that they're fortresses anyway would have meant that she could do whatever she liked.
What happened here, and on the scale it happened, actually probably created something of a fear zone which protected itself. In other words, it was so horrendous that no one dare speak out against it.
She was not popular among the locals in any way, and her bad reputation regarding young girls travelled way beyond Castries. Families hid their daughters from Báthory.
I don't think perhaps they lived every day in terror of Elizabeth Báthory coming down out of the castle to do them in. But it's clear that, you know, her reputation was extraordinary, that there was concern about what going to the castle meant, and that stories had circulated within the locality.
Despite the evidence, I'm still struggling to discover how Báthory managed to be a caring mother to her children, while at the same time maiming and killing 600 young girls. In her will, she talks of the great love she had for her son and heir.
This is someone who manages her household, who maintains her social position and the position of her family, who successfully marries off her daughters, who manages to ensure that her estates are handed on to her son. In many ways, she does a very good job.
What we see from people who are psychopathic, they can maintain superficial relationships for a period of time. They are chameleons. They can certainly become, you know, members of communities and actually go unnoticed in terms of any kind of unusual or sadistic behaviour being overt. It tends to be more covert.
One of the problems of being, you know, in the aristocracy, you are supreme and your judgments are unquestioned. To place someone who is disordered and has a sadistic predilection and gains sexual pleasure from inflicting horrendous harm on others, it is almost legitimised because that is the way she is.
Everything in her life she's desired to do, she can do. And I think it's probably as simple as that. She did it because she could do it.
There's no doubt in my mind that Báthory was an evil mass murderess who killed poor peasant girls she believed were worthless. But I still want to investigate new claims that far from being a sadistic serial killer, Báthory is actually a natural healer. Over the course of this programme, I've been looking at the woman who is on record as the most prolific serial killer in history. The 16th century Hungarian noblewoman, Countess Elizabeth Báthory, is said to have slaughtered over 600 of her servant girls to satisfy some kind of sexually sadistic urge. During my investigation, I've sometimes struggled to separate the fact from the fiction surrounding her life. I haven't seen any evidence that she was the vampire that she's been portrayed as in folklore. But records do indicate that a large number of girls did die whenever she was around. Interestingly, some of the modern theories about Báthory give some of the old folklores a real run for their money.
There is a revisionist or apologist movement in Hungary trying to redress the Báthory legend, saying that no, she actually was setting up a medical center, doing research into the body and healing potions and lotions, and that's what she was supposed to be doing in the castle.
I think the danger is that because Elizabeth Báthory's name was blackened so much by the stories that circulated about her life in the 18th and 19th century, it's then difficult to say, okay, well, we want to slightly maybe not rehabilitate her, but try to understand exactly what went on. But I think on occasion people have been tempted to go too far.
Within the context of Báthory's household, I think that illegal abortions were being carried out there. In those days, abortions were punishable by death. All the alleged victims were young girls, which makes me wonder whether Báthory was helping them get rid of unwanted pregnancies.
People say that she was perhaps an example of an early medical doctor doing experiments, and I think it's absolutely utter nonsense. I think that that is a point of view that tries to impose a modern excuse on what is inexcusable behavior.
This is all part of the conspiracy myth, and you can find it in the latest Hungarian big encyclopedia. You look up Elizabeth Báthory, and there it will explain that it was a conspiracy to do her down and get hold of her land. This is not the case at all and defies the historical evidence.
It's clear from the fact that official documents went missing that Báthory's crimes were deemed so shocking at the time that a decision was made by the Hungarian establishment to bury the whole sordid affair.
This disables, you see, the traditions and structures of Hungarian society. We have this stratified society with the nobility at the top, the high aristocracy, the peasantry, townsfolk, everybody has their rightful place. And here we have egregious behaviour by a leading member of the aristocracy. It subverts the existing order. It's better to hush it up.
I think it's a great shame that documents about Báthory's life disappeared, because they could maybe have helped increase our understanding of the female serial killer. Instead, the rumours spread like wildfire and Báthory became some sort of gothic poster girl for horror writers and filmmakers. These are just some of the Báthory-inspired bits and pieces you can buy if you're so inclined. Although I wouldn't like to imagine the screams if you woke up on Christmas morning to find this at the end of your bed.
I guess over time we've seen the reinvention of Elizabeth Báthory by different generations according to their interests, say within the realm of kind of gothic horror or within more contemporary films.
Elizabeth Báthory is perfect for filmmaking because she's sexy, she's powerful, she's sadistic, she's cruel, she's bisexual or possibly omnisexual, and bathing in blood, whether she did that or not, is an incredible image and very, very cinematic.
Julie!
Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the ugliest of them all?
In the 70s, we had Hammer Horror's The Countess Dracula starring Ingrid Pitt, who's sensational in this.
Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the most terrifying of them all?
To me, Elizabeth was amazing. And what people say about her, I feel, is complete lies. They haven't got a clue.
Elizabeth Báthory's quest for beauty and doing it in such a sadistic way has had a huge impact on movies like The Brothers Grimm by Terry Gilliam, where we have the Mirror Queen, who actually uses blood in order to keep her beauty. And also Walt Disney's Snow White, the evil queen in that, wants to destroy Snow White, but is afraid of getting older, transforms herself into a hag, but must transform herself back. Very, very vain.
She influenced arguably Bram Stoker's Dracula. She's become a kind of sort of goth cult figure in a strange way, and in America and in Central Europe. So she's, in her own murderousness, quite a significant figure.
As a writer, there's always a temptation to embellish and exaggerate for dramatic effect. That's the beauty of fiction. You can create what you like within reason. But perhaps by making Bathory into a mythical figure, we have romanticised the horrific nature of her crimes.
I mean, I can see why it would inspire so many stories, but I think that's where we have to differentiate stories and kind of the fictional end is based on. You know, some of it is truthful and other bits have been completely embellished, exaggerated and changed for the purposes of entertainment. I think it was bad enough just what she did without all the other bits being added to it.
She is the ultimate mysterious character who is the starring role in her own story.
There's no doubt in my mind that Countess Elizabeth Bathory was an evil sexual sadist. But so was Rose West, a woman who lived over 500 years later. During the course of this series, I've investigated some of the most notorious female serial killers in history. But can we draw any comparisons between the crimes of Myra Hindley and the likes of Mary Ann Cotton? The answer is no. That's because there's been no comprehensive study about why women kill. I think that the establishment still believes these cases are just one-offs, that a woman's natural maternal instinct prevents her from becoming a monster. But as we've seen, evil has many faces. Someone, somewhere, needs to find out why certain women have a compulsion to kill before the next generation of lady killers strike.